Well, are you ready for it? Hockey is back. Tonight, our Vegas Golden Knights begin their quest to repeat as Western Conference champs, and this time, bring home the Stanley Cup, right? Tonight is our first preseason game of the year, and then on October 4th, our boys are going to open the regular season right here in Vegas against the Philadelphia Flyers. So, while Mark Fleury and all the other boys are stretching and getting ready for the season, I thought you and I should take a little time this morning to prep our vocal cords and get ready for the season as well, okay? So on the count of three, we are all going to chant, "Go Knights, go," three times. You ready? You with me? All right. One, two, three. Go Knights, go! Go Knights, go! Go Knights, go! It's crazy, isn't it? 2 years ago, there were no fans. There were no jerseys. There was no team, right? There was just a rumor. There's going to be hockey in the desert. As recently as May of 2017, there were no players, right? It wasn't until June of last year that a group of cast-offs and misfits was pieced together from all the other NHL teams. But there were skeptics everywhere, right? Hockey will never catch on in Vegas. There are too many entertainment options. There's no civic pride. People in Vegas will never rally around a hometown team. We know better, don't we? Because in June of last year, thousands of us gathered in 100-degree heat, wearing our Knights jerseys, our Knights t-shirts, our Knights caps, waving Knights banners, watching our Vegas Golden Knights on the giant screen in Toshiba Plaza. And it was so fun to watch thousands of people who had never cared about or watched hockey before, people who didn't know what icing was, people who thought that a hat trick was something Penn and Teller did, right? It was so fun to watch them buy in and become fans who wore the gear and knew the players. I watched this firsthand with my wife. All right, my wife's name is Carigwin. Let me hear you say Carigwin. Yeah, you guys laugh. You're like, yeah, good luck with that. No, so I do that for two reasons, right? Number one, her name is unique, right? It's a beautiful name, goes with a beautiful girl, so when you meet her, I want you to know she's with me, right? You're like, Jay, you did good. All right, there's another reason for it, and that is I need to know you're awake, right? Like, I need to know you're with me, so periodically throughout this message, I'm going to say, hey, will you say this with me, and I need you to say it back with a lot of energy, a lot of enthusiasm, even if you don't mean it, right? Just for me, if you could do that, I would appreciate it. Anyways, my wife's name is Carigwin, and we met 22 years ago this week. And up until this past year, she was not a fan of any team in any sport, right? She would sit on the couch and watch sports with me, and she'd feign interest along the way, but more often than not, she'd fall asleep sometime in the first inning, first period, first quarter, right? Sports just didn't hold her interest. So, being the amazing husband that I am, when the Knights won 8 of their first 9 games and became a story that I wanted to check out, I bought Carigwin tickets for her birthday. Yeah. Now, before you judge me, hear me out. As you might expect, when we arrived at T-Mobile for that first game in late November, she hadn't quite bought in yet. She wasn't quite sure that this was a good birthday present. But as the game went on, in fact, before the game even began, when Carigwin felt the energy of the crowd and she took in the spectacle that is a Knights home game, she was hooked, right? She still didn't know the players' names or the rules or even how many periods there were, but Carigwin was a fan. And then December hit, and the Knights went on an 8-game winning streak, and we attended 2 more games, and by the time Christmas rolled around, Carigwin had bought herself 3 sweatshirts, 2 t-shirts, and a baseball cap, right? This girl who previously did not care at all about sports now has a closet full of gear. In fact, almost everything up here is hers, okay? Including the number 21 Knights jerseys that she bought for our 21st anniversary this summer. Yeah. And guess what she got me for my birthday? Tickets to opening night. Uh-huh. Yeah. Now, you know what's crazy about our story? It's that it's your story, too. Maybe not you personally, but somebody you know, a neighbor, a coworker, a friend. Somebody went nuts for the night. And it doesn't matter what part of town they live in or what they do for a living or what race or gender or age. When this story of the knights began to grow, when it started to take on that fairy tale team of destiny feel, all sorts of people who had never cared about hockey before became fans. And that's what happens with a great story, isn't it? Right? It grows, it spreads, it crosses boundaries, it unites people. When a story is abnormally good, when it's filled with hope and it makes you believe things can get better, people can't help but tell the story. And when others hear the story and they see the effect, the impact that it's had on the person telling it, they want in. They don't want to miss out. So they begin to rearrange their schedules and reprioritize their spending. And before long, they're living and spreading the story themselves. And that's what happened with the story of Jesus. See, Jesus lived an extraordinary life. Like, he was just better at life than anybody else. The way he moved through the world, the things that he taught, the way he treated people, it was all so freeing, so liberating. And what he did, the way he challenged racism and classism and gender bias, the way he leveled walls and borders and divisions, the way he knelt in solidarity with the marginalized and offered hope to the widows and the orphans, the way he loved people and treated people and offered dignity to those no one else would, the way Jesus lived his life was so refreshing. It was so invigorating. It was like the air around him was cleaner and fresher, and it filled your lungs in a way that made you feel totally alive. Jesus had this ability to take old entrenched ideas and just turn them or tilt them slightly so that all of a sudden they took on a whole new meaning. Teachings that had been exclusive and restricted became welcoming and freeing. Traditions that were rote and stale took on new life and offered new life to others. And as a result, all these staunch, judgmental, legalistic religious leaders began to see their followers go the way of this woke young rabbi who knew how to laugh with his whole body and crack jokes and just live a different way. You see, Jesus did life better than anybody else. And as people got around him, they began to feel more alive than ever before. And as they would listen to and apply his teachings to their lives, as they would model their life after his, others took notice. Others wanted in. Others wanted to hear the story and meet the man and experience this newer, bigger, fuller way of life. Now, there was no such thing as jersey sales back in Jesus' day. But if there had been, right? If there had been like togas or robes with sevens on the front and Jesus on the back, like, tell me those things wouldn't have flown off the shelves, right? If you got, like, your own walk-on-water sandals or your, you know, wash-your-neighbor's-feet bath towels, those things would have sold like hotcakes, right? But since there was no Jesus merch to buy, the way people would know that a man or woman was a follower of Jesus was to watch the way the woman lived and moved through the world, to observe just how generous and loving the man's life was. You see, being part of Jesus' team, being one of his followers, was all about walking in rhythm with him, doing what he would do, embracing who he would embrace, loving who he would love. It was all about being a breath of fresh air, a source of joy, a catalyst for good. You see, it's always been the case. Joining Jesus from the very beginning has always, in fact, let me hear you say always.
Always.
Joining Jesus has always been about bringing life to everyone, everywhere, every day. And that's why the religion that bears his name grew and spread so rapidly. You see, before this movement was known as Christianity, people who joined Jesus were simply known as people of the way. There was a distinctive way they interacted with their neighbors, a distinctive way they treated the diseased and disenfranchised, a distinctive way they included and embraced those of different races, ethnicities, and religions. You see, their approach to life was so unique. Their manners so uncommon. The way they lived so surprising and fresh that people around town could point out who Jesus' followers were by simply saying they're people of the way. You see, rather than saying, well, you know Jay. He's that middle-aged white dude with the gray hair and the big nose who always makes us cheer, go Knights, go. He'd be like, well, you know Manuela. She's a woman of the way. You know Cecil. He always lives that Jesus way. Well, you know Rosie. She lives that surprising, refreshing way that always leaves us shaking our heads. About a year ago, a group of us under Drew's leadership began imagining what it might be like to be a church, a collection of people known all over our city for the beautiful, surprising, life-giving way that we live. What if every child, every student, every adult began to live and look a little more like Jesus? How contagious, how irresistible, how attractive and appealing would that be? So we began asking ourselves, how can we help our church family follow Jesus to more life than ever before? How can we help people take regular, intentional steps into the ways and rhythms of Jesus? And what we came up with is by no means all-encompassing, is by no means perfect, but it's a start. We call it For Life. Because in each of the four seasons of the year, we want to imagine and consider what it is that God might be calling us to do, how he might want us to give a little bit more in any one of four areas. Our good friends, our good connections, our good strength, our good resources. And then once we've discerned what it is that God's calling us to do, how it is he wants us to act differently, we just do that for 3, maybe 4 months. And then we just look around and we watch how Jesus brings life to us and those around us. So there are four seasons. There are four areas. If you look at the book, there are four steps. We do it for 3, maybe 4 months. And we called it For Life. Because we are that kind of creative, right? Like you put a bunch of pastors in a room and that's the kind of creativity that you come up with. And anyways, it's our earnest belief that as more and more of us give more and more of ourselves to Jesus, more and more life will fill our city and more people will want to join him. And because we want to multiply the effects of this, because we want to encourage people to keep going, we regularly tell stories or show videos of people right here in our church, normal people like you and me, who are doing small and sometimes big things to bring life to our city. In fact, check out this video of a group of students who are bringing life to their high school. Wait a second, I don't have a video. Yeah, I'm sorry. You know, about a month ago, I was having lunch with our video storyteller, Daniel, and I was giving him all these great ideas for all sorts of new ways that we could tell stories about For Life. And knowing that I'd be teaching this weekend, I was like, dude, how about if you make a video on my topic of us trusting Jesus with our resources and our strength? And I mean, I laid the whole thing out for him, right? I might as well have storyboarded it for him. And as I was painting the picture, he's nodding and smiling. He even said, oh, and we could put music behind it right there. It would be so powerful. So I was getting excited, right? I couldn't wait for this moment in the message when I directed your attention to the screen and we all watched this amazing video that told stories of life-changing, caused tears to come to our eyes and joy to overflow out of our hearts and us to be challenged to go into the streets and make a difference. And then Daniel burst my bubble. He broke my little heart. Yeah, he told me exactly where I fall on his priority list. He said, Jay, you know Drew's coming back next week. And a couple weeks after that, it's the handoff from Kevin to Drew. And you know all that's going to require video. And you know that you're not my boss, right? You know your name's not Kevin or Drew. So no suit for you, no video for Jay. Now, as hurtful and uncalled for as that conversation was, I realized two things in that moment. Number one, I was going to have a microphone today and the opportunity to get back at Daniel. Now, I'm not going to take it, but that did pop into my mind at the time. The second thing I realized in that moment, and maybe this is the more pastoral, more spiritual thing I realized, is that us telling stories, us showing videos of life change, all that really is a modern day version of what the biblical storytellers were doing. You see, when Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, they wrote out the stories of Jesus' life, when Peter, Paul, and James wrote letters to their friends that became stories and books of the Bible, all they were doing was inviting people to join Jesus or encouraging those who already had by telling stories of life change. They say, here's what happens when people begin to follow Jesus, when they begin to live his way. Here's what happens when people give a little more. Life breaks out and communities are changed. So since I don't have a video to show, thank you, Daniel, why don't we all still turn our attention to the screens and let's read a story together from the Bible. Let's read a story that the Apostle Paul told to help his friends understand what happens whenever we trust Jesus with a little bit of our strength and a little bit of our resources. 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 1 says this, "And now, brothers, we want you to know about the grace that God has given the Macedonian churches. Out of the most severe trial, their overflowing joy and their extreme poverty welled up in rich generosity. For I testify that they gave as much as they were able and even beyond their ability." Now, here's the backstory. Here's what's been going on that leads up to this story. Like I said, this story of Jesus was so refreshing. It was so new. It was so exciting that it began to spread and grow, and it began to encircle the earth. If we had time this morning to look at the book of Acts, we would be able to watch and see how the story of Jesus crossed all sorts of geographic and political and cultural and ethnic boundaries. We would be able to read stories about people joining Jesus and finding life in cities like Antioch and regions like Cyprus and Macedonia and Philippi. We would be able to hear about people of the way bringing life to cities like Athens and Berea and Corinth. We would watch as this movement began to grow and spread and expand across thousands upon thousands of miles by simply offering people a better way to live. You see, that's the dominant story. That's the central motif of the book of Acts. But alongside it is this other storyline. You see, while people all over the globe are joining Jesus and experiencing life, back in Jerusalem, where this whole thing got started, the believers are experiencing something very different. You see, this surprising, fresh, new way of life that Jesus introduced, well, it was so countercultural, it was so different that it upset the political and religious balance of the city. The people in charge didn't like this. The people in power weren't happy, so they began to persecute people of the way. They threw them in jail. They fired them from their jobs. They took away their civil liberties. They turned their families against them and caused them to ostracize them. And if all of that wasn't bad enough, Rome kept raising taxes and raising taxes and raising taxes, and at the same time, a severe famine hit the land. So on top of all of the emotional and mental and relational stress that the believers were experiencing, they now had this added factor of trying to figure out how to keep a roof over their heads and put food on the table. So this guy named Paul gets an idea. He says, I'm going to go around to all the different churches that have popped up around the globe outside of Jerusalem in the last few years, and I'm just going to make one pass kind of north and west through all the towns, villages, and cities that I come across. And as I do, I'm going to tell them what's happening back in the mother church, and I'm going to ask them to contribute financially to meet the need. His journey covers more than 3,000 miles, and he visits dozens upon dozens of different churches and dozens of different cities. But along the way, there are a few churches and a few cities that he skips. There are a few places that he doesn't ask to contribute because of their own extreme poverty. And the churches in Macedonia are among these churches. They were desperately poor. They were barely surviving themselves. So Paul doesn't ask them to contribute. I mean, after all, why do that to them, right? Why put them in that position where they feel bad because they're not able to help? But as you may have already guessed, since we're telling their story, when Paul comes around a couple of years later and he makes a second pass through the region to collect what all the wealthier churches had given, to his surprise and everybody else's surprise, these impoverished Macedonians, these people whose extreme poverty had kept Paul from ever even asking for a donation, they had taken a collection of their own. They had a gift to give. And the Bible doesn't tell us how much they gave. It just says this: it was extravagant. It was lavish. It was rich in generosity. They gave way beyond their means. You see, men, women, teenagers who've joined Jesus and experienced the life that he brings, they don't see or recognize limitations. They don't begin with who they are or who they're not, what they have, what they don't. Instead, they begin with a foundational belief that they serve an all-powerful, all-knowing, always present God who creates resources where they don't currently exist. So, to inspire believers all over the world, to help people who are following Jesus to bring life wherever they are, Paul says, have I got a story for you? He says, let me tell you a story about how God brought life through a group of people in Macedonia. And the way Paul frames the story, it is so beautiful. It's so simple. In order to talk about their giving, Paul begins with their receiving. Look with me at verse 1. It says, and now, brothers, we want you to know about the grace that God has given the Macedonian churches. Paul says the Macedonians received something from God. He says they received a grace. That's what he calls their desire to be part of the project, what he calls their extreme want to. He calls it a grace. Now, I don't know if you know this or not, but the Bible wasn't originally written in English. It was written primarily in Greek and Hebrew. And this letter in particular was written in Greek. And the letter, or the word that Paul uses here for grace is charis. Let me hear you say charis. Now, charis, like so many English words, has all sorts of different possible meanings. One meaning is unmerited favor or a gift that we don't deserve. Like the life God gives us in Jesus, right? We can't earn it. We don't deserve it. It's by God's grace that we're offered the opportunity to enter this deeper, fuller, bigger way of life. That's one possible meaning for charis or grace. Another possible meaning, and this is the way Paul's using it here, is a divinely given passion, an inner prompting. So Paul says that God gave the Macedonians a passion, a calling, a prompting to meet the need in Jerusalem. He says God gave them a grace. So what are the implications of this for us? Well, think about it. How many of us are asked to give money to something a couple times a month? How many of us? Yeah, how many of us say maybe it's at church or at school or a nonprofit or through a mail or an email or a GoFundMe page or a weather-worn man outside a grocery store? How many of us are asked to give money, food, resources once a week? How many of you would be like, Jay, it's more like daily, right? There are just so many people, so many projects, so many legit needs, so many great causes and worthwhile endeavors. And then there are all those super cute little kids who are like this tall going around trying to sell you Girl Scout cookies and candy. And then there are all the teenagers who are doing fundraisers for football and for wrestling and for lacrosse and volleyball and photo club and band. And I mean, the list goes on and on and on. I mean, there are so many things that we're asked to give our resources to. And then there are all the projects that we're asked to give our strength to, right? All the places that we're asked to serve and donate our time. All the ministries here at church, all the needs in the community, all the soup kitchens and shelters and halfway houses, all the civic organizations and rotary clubs and little leagues. I mean, there are just so many great people doing so much good, bringing life in so many ways, and every last one of them is in need of and asking for our time, our resources, and our strength. It can be overwhelming, can it? So how are we supposed to navigate all that? How are we, as men and women who've joined Jesus and desire to bring life, how are we to determine who and what to give our money to, and where and when and how often to serve? Are we supposed to take everything that we own and sell it and give all our money to the poor and become poor ourselves? Are we supposed to spend every moment of every day working our fingers to the bone, trying to meet every need that arises to the detriment of our health and our families? I don't think so. I don't think that's what Paul is saying here. So what is he saying? Well, if you ask me, it's something beautiful and free. See, Paul says that God gave the Macedonians a grace. He gave them a prompting, a desire to meet the need in Jerusalem. He says that God gave them a grace for this specific project, this specific need, at this specific time. In other words, sometimes God will give us a grace. Sometimes he'll give us a prompting, a desire, a sense that we're supposed to be part of some project, some need, some cause. And then there'll be other times we'll be presented with another opportunity, another need. But regardless of how valid and worthwhile it is, we won't have that same desire, that same sense that same grace. You see, there are graces and passions that I've been given, and there are graces and passions that you've been given, and there are graces and passions that she's been given, and there are graces and passions that he's been given, and sometimes all of those graces and passions will align, and other times they won't. You see, we're not all going to be passionate about the same causes at the same time. But as men and women who've joined Jesus, one thing is absolutely certain. As men and women who've joined Jesus, every last one of us will have a grace for something. Every last one of us will have a passion to meet some need somewhere. Every last one of us will give generously and beyond our means to some project, some cause that brings life in Jesus' name. You see, bringing life is at the core. It is foundational to what it means to be a Jesus follower. There's no getting around it. There's no escaping it. When we join Jesus, the life that he places within us, it wells up and it spills over and it pours out of us. We can't stop it. And that's what happened in Macedonia. Look at verse 2. It says, out of the most severe trial, their overflowing joy and their extreme poverty welled up in rich generosity. Now, it would be so easy for me to make this all about money now. For me to say that because the Macedonians' generosity was displayed through extreme financial sacrifice, you and I need to make extreme financial sacrifices, right? We need to pull out our wallets and our checkbooks and dig deep and give towards some ministry or some mission or some project. But for me to do that would be coercive or manipulative or at the very least inconsistent with the story. You see, we have to remember how the story began. Paul never asked the Macedonians for money. He never demanded that they give. In fact, he didn't even make the opportunity available to them. Instead, God gave them a grace. God gave them a passion. As they reflected on what Jesus had done in them, and they imagined what he might want to do through them, they felt this undeniable nudge to give extravagantly and beyond their means. So you and I need to wrap our heads around the fact that bringing life isn't about us giving our stuff away. Bringing life is about us walking in rhythm with God. It's about us listening for that divine nudge, us watching to see what it is that God is inviting us into. You see, bringing life is what you and I do in response to what God has already done. It is our way of showing our immense gratitude to Jesus by using our gifts, our abilities, our skills, our talents. It's us using our words, our actions, our influence, our good resources, and our good strength to make the world a better place. And when we do that, when we respond to the life that Jesus has poured into us by pouring our life out for others, God does something amazing in return. Look at verse 3. It says, "For I testify that they gave as much as they were able and even beyond their ability." Oh, that last phrase is awesome. You guys are going to love this. That last phrase where he says they gave as much as they were able and even beyond their ability. Remember how I said the Bible was not originally written in English, but rather Greek and Hebrew? Well, in Greek, that last phrase is just two words, huper dunamis, okay? Huper means over, above, beyond. It's where we get our words hyper and super. And dunamis means power or ability. It's where we get our word dynamite. So huper dunamis, super dynamite. Say it with me, super dynamite. All right, so check this out, right? Paul says that the Macedonians, by leaning into the grace that God gave them, by giving of their good resources, they lived super dynamite lives. He says that they brought life to others, their lives exploded with more life than ever before. And that's what we all want, right? We all want super dynamite lives. We all want lives that explode with hope and joy and possibility. And according to this passage, the way we get that, the way our lives well up into more life than ever before, the way our lives explode with possibility, is for us to give more and more and more to the people and the causes and the organizations that God gives us a grace for. So there's only one question that remains. And it's a question that we're asking in all of our children and student environments this weekend as well. So parents, get ready, because your kids are going to come home with a little white refrigerator magnet that looks like this. And it's got space for you to answer the question I'm about to ask. All right, so here it is. Here's the question. What is God giving you a grace for? How is God calling your family to bring life this fall? What good strength, what good resource is God telling you to give away in this next season? Now, some of you came in here this morning already having kind of an idea of what that thing might be. God's been working you over for a little while. Others of you, as I've been talking, you've had some sort of gentle nudge in your spirit that said, I should give to this. But it's also entirely possible that you're sitting here and you have absolutely no clue what that thing or cause or person might be. Right? You want to follow Jesus to more life than ever before. You've got some resources you'd willingly give away. You have some time you would invest in the right project if it came along, but you have no clarity about the specifics. If that's you, we have a great resource to help you identify what grace God is giving you. Outside at the For Life table are journals like these. They're there to simply assist you, to give you a framework for determining how God wants to use you and your family to bring life this fall. As I mentioned earlier, there are four steps in the process. The first two, you do all by yourself. First, you reflect on where you've been, who you are, what gifts, talents, and abilities you have, what passions you have, what opportunities have come your way. You reflect on where you've been. And then you imagine where God might be taking you next. You look at what doors seem to be opening to you, what opportunities are coming your way, what people seem to be coming into your orbit and are going to be part of your circle of influence over the next few months. You reflect on where you've been, you imagine where God might be taking you, and in the process, he begins to give you that prompting, that nudge, that grace. And when he does, you declare it to a group of friends who will support you and encourage you. You write it on a refrigerator magnet where the whole family can see. And then, for the next 3 or 4 months, you act. You join Jesus in whatever grace he's given you, and you trust him to multiply your gift and bring more life than ever before. And as we do this, Jesus will take our ordinary everyday lives and replace them with super dynamite lives. Jesus will fill our life with his life, a life so rich, so vibrant, so miraculous that we can't contain it. His life will build and grow and expand and explode out of us into our community. It'll heal people and unite people and write a narrative so beautiful, so filled with hope, so glorious that people will rush to our homes to hear the story of Jesus. And when they encounter it, they will take it with them. And wherever they go, beauty will flood the streets. Life will spring from dry ground. And our city will have something new, something fresh, something bristling with life to cheer for. And those number 7 Jesus togas, they'll fly off the shelves. Let's stand together for prayer. Our Lord and our God, we praise you and thank you for the incredible privilege of being called the sons and daughters of God. Lord, may you fill us with nudges, with promptings, with passions, with grace to bring life to our community in new ways. Lord, may we be a different people in these next 3, 4, 5 months as you begin to lay on our heart what's next, what more you want us to give. May we be open to your leading, and may we as a result experience super dynamite lives. For it's in your son's name that we pray. Amen. Have a great week. Can you ridge on?